Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Delighted, so delighted. We haven't had her on in a bit. And she is the New York State Assembly Majority Leader, Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a Democrat. She serves Buffalo's 141st Assembly District. Welcome back, Majority Leader Peoples-Stokes.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's quite a time. We are now into the new year, and the governor has delivered her State of the State address, filed this week by her budget proposal. Maybe we should start there. She's issued her $252 billion spending plan for New York. This from the New York Times addresses concerns about affordability, crime, and the cost of living. Your thoughts in general on the governor's budget proposal?
In general, I think she starts in a good place. And I think a lot of the things that she is proposing and is making reference to, and not just in her State of the State, but in the budget, are things that have come out of the legislature. So things like free lunches for children, things like free community college, things like the tax cut for middle class. These are all things that essentially came out of the legislature at one point or the other. So that basically means that I would say at least half or more of her budget as it was presented to us, we won't need to make changes to, which is unusual, right? Foundation aid was maintained at its level. The big five school districts look to get more resources. Underfunded schools look to get more resources. So there's no battle there with that. So I think that she's covered a lot of bases. There's still always room for discussion, but I think that she began in a good place. And I think she'll have, you know, quite a few people that will be supportive of what she's saying. In fact, I think to a certain extent, some of it could be even bipartisan support to the extent that they will do that, because some of these ideas were theirs.
You beat me to it. I just talked with your counterpart, Minority Leader Barclay, and he said, Well, you know, those are our ideas. We've been talking about affordability and public safety for years. So, you know, this is basically the stuff that we've been putting out there, and the Democrats have grabbed hold of it.
So we should have a fairly smooth budget process, right? Let's hope so. But this is Albany, and, you know, all of these fun things can change because people always want to try and put everything into a political perspective as opposed to an opportunity to serve the people with whatever budget we come up with.
I agree with you. You know, I talk to so many on each side of the aisle here, and that's the thing I always ask them. When are we going to put down the partisanship? Because you're already hearing, even though Barclay has said, that's the Republican Assembly Minority Leader, Will Barclay, has said that, you know, these are their ideas. I'm already hearing, you know, from Republicans in the minority that, you know, here we go again, spending, and this is too much, and this, you know, we can't afford it. And, you know, the same old stereotypes, the Democrats tax and spend, and the Republicans cut and reduce
programs. Well, at some point, my good friend Will Barclay, he and I actually joined the assembly in the same year. And his colleagues are going to have to make the constituency of New York State understand why the wealth gap in this country is growing so big. I mean, it's so large, it's almost out of control. And if you watched the inauguration, then you saw who the people who were prominently seated, even prominently seated prior to senators and the Speaker of the Congress. These are the wealthiest business people in America. And they literally have increased the amount of money that they make since his election by $233 billion. That's almost the size of New York's budget that the governor just presented. And you want to talk about everything is costing too much when we're trying to take care of the people who said they were suffering from the economy, who don't have access to proper housing, who need better education. These things are not free. We need to protect health care and Medicaid. These things are not free. They cost money. So if you're going to deliver a service to your constituents, you cannot say it costs too much to do it when you've got five people in America who earn more than most people in the state of New York.
Well, and are we cynical to say that it's no wonder when the poor don't have an interest group, they don't have a lobbying organization, they have money to put into the campaigns of the legislators, but the wealthy groups do?
They do, and they can tell these guys what to say and when to say it, and even though they know that they don't have that access to that kind of wealth, they'll do what it takes to protect it because they help them get reelected. We got to stop wanting to get elected based on those kind of issues. We got to want to be elected because of what we deliver to the people that we represent.
I agree with that, too. We were speaking with Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. Now, to some of that stereotyping, I did see, Majority Leader, that the Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie, said recently to Spectrum's Susan Arbetter, I assume raising revenue will absolutely be on the table this legislative session. Revenue raising often means tax raise.
Well, he did say that. Actually, I heard him say that. I thought it was a good interview that he did with Susan. And that may be necessary when, again, five people, or I would say three business people, have earned $233 billion since November to now. There's no question that there's some availability of resources for us to be able to collect to deliver services to the people who need them. Now, I know that the governor has also said that she doesn't want to increase taxes, but if you want to cut taxes for middle-income and lower-income people, and you want to provide additional services, and you want to maintain the kind of surplus that New York State has, which you do need to maintain a surplus, you may need to raise revenue in order to do it. So let us get a chance to look at all the numbers, finalize all the numbers, and see what we come up with. There may be that we come up with an increase on the highest earners in the state of New York. There may be, and there may be that we don't. But I think we have to go through that negotiation with the governor, with the Senate, and of course, you know, my leader, Speaker Hastie, his opinion is going to weigh heavily.
Well, part of this article I read to you from the Times says, perhaps most significant is what Ms. Hochul's budget did not include. She offered no contingency plans in case President Trump makes good on his vow to halt congestion pricing, which would stop the flow of hundreds of millions of dollars a year to the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. The pricing plan, as you know, of course, Majority Leader, but for our listeners, was paused before the election and then restarted afterward. It's now $9 toll below 60th Street at peak times. We're already seeing some positive responses. Of course, there's been a lot of negativity surrounding it as a tax, and, you know, there's been some bipartisan criticism on that end. But I wonder what you think about the fact that the Times points out there was nothing in this budget to indicate what happens if that revenue goes away.
Well, I mean, there is so many things that this new administration federally could do to New York State and other states across the nation, that sometimes you have to let these things happen so people can see what they voted for, so we can get back to the Mario Cuomo quote, the pendulum swings both ways. And I mean, people are looking for New Yorkers and Californians and other states that did not vote with him to solve all the problems that he could create. No, some of the problems that he could create, we should let happen. And perhaps the people in New Jersey who need to be able to get into New York City to work, the people who don't live in New York City who need to be able to get there to work, when they see what could happen if nothing happens with congestion pricing and how things could get worse, not just for MTA, but for traffic in general, that's not going to make them happy either. And so I think sometimes you have to let things happen instead of trying to fix everything before it gets broke.
Well, we're already seeing some things happen with all these executive orders, including pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Now, this may be one of the single most, if not the most important, issues of our day, with the Earth warming up. We're seeing evidence of it all over the place with extreme weather, including the latest fires in the Los Angeles area. And there we have some legislation. New York's in many ways leading the way here. The Climate Superfund Act is now law, and it will require polluters to pay. It's already under assault in Vermont. That law there, a bit different than New York's, has been sued. Liz Krueger, the senator from Manhattan, tells me she expects that to happen to the New York law as well. So, as you said, New York can do what it can do, but on the national scene, it's happening that we're pulling back from climate and climate agreements. You can only imagine what's to come.
Well, you have to believe that these people who own these industries have been emboldened by the last election. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if there are lawsuits towards New York State. But I think we have to fight it. And we have to fight for it because there is no question. State taxpayers, whether you earn $30,000 a year, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, or $1 million a year, your tax dollars have been financing cleaning up after weather events across the state to the tune of multiple millions of dollars. And we can keep using that money for that, or we can keep using the taxpayers' dollars for things that deliver a positive impact on their lives. I think the people who created the problem should pay for it. And if there's a way we can make them do that, then I think we should. And I'm glad that the governor put in additional resources in her budget to begin dealing with other climate issues. And I honor Liz Krueger and others for even putting that bill in.
Well, let's talk a little bit about public safety and mental health. Now, Governor Hochul said public safety is a top priority this year. She pledged to keep police patrolling New York City subways overnight for the next 6 months. She also wants to change the state's mental hygiene laws to make it easier to involuntarily commit people who may be dangerous during a mental health crisis. As far as the police and the subways, probably not a bad idea. We've had some violent incidents. In one case, a woman burned alive, set afire by an illegal immigrant. And we've had, you know, this congestion pricing that's pushing more people toward public transportation. So you don't want people feeling unsafe on the subway, right?
No, you don't want people feeling unsafe anywhere in America. But you do know we have just sworn in a president with 34 felony convictions. So I don't know how safe that makes people feel. But I don't think that you can fix mental health problems with law enforcement. Although people have to be safe on the subway, and I'm not going to, you know, disagree with that. And if the presence of law enforcement will make people feel safer and stop someone who wanted to do something that wasn't right from doing it, then that's a good thing. But generally, people who have mental health problems, none of that stuff impacts them. They have mental health problems. If they could control their behavior and their life, they would, but they can't. And I just don't think that incarceration will fix that. And so I think we have to figure another way to deal with mental health. And I don't know, David, you probably weren't even around back in the day when there were, I would say, institutions where people who had these issues could be taken and taken care of and then sent back home, as same as if you have a broken ankle. You go to the hospital, you get it fixed, and once you get it fixed, you go home. We don't have that level of support like that anymore. And quite honestly, you know, there are people, even in my own family, who would like to see their loved ones get some help, but they can't force them to get it. But they know they need it, but they can't force them. And I hate the thought of thinking that you have to force someone to take care of themselves, but sometimes you do. And if we don't do that, then they get worse and they compound the problems that we have in our society when we really need to refocus back on what it is that they need and provide it for them. Well, even if they don't think they need it. And that's so sad to have to say, because it hurts my heart to say it. But if I think about my own family members, who was like, well, I don't know what else to do, because so they won't do this, they won't do this. This is what the doctor tells them to do. They won't do it, and then I got this. I was like, well, you just got to make them do it. No, you can't make them do it right now. And they know that, even though they have mental health problems. They do know that. So it shakes me to have to agree with the governor on that one. But at some point, we have to do what's in the best interest of society as a whole. And it's scary, but it's got to be done. And by the way, public safety is important to every community in the state of New York, including the one that I represent.
Indeed.
No one wants to live in a community that's not safe. We still have way too many guns in inner city communities because our young people have become the new market for the industry that's built where these weapons are built. In America, by the way, I don't think we're their first market. Their first market is the cartels from Mexico. And we complain about that all the time, but we're not saying anything about the fact that all of the weapons that they're using in these major fights that they're having internally amongst themselves with their own people are being sold to them by American manufacturers.
Well, and the other thing I just saw, we've seen a spate of these stories now, is these 3D printers that print guns, gun parts, and they put them together. And there was in the capital region of New York, there was a major bust, and the number of guns that were printed, the person was printing them en masse and selling them. They couldn't fit all the guns in the photograph.
Oh, gosh, right here in the Capital Region.
Right in the Capital Region. And, you know, you can 3D print a gun. That's a ghost gun. There's no serial number. You know, the police can't track it.
So why do people who support public safety debate you when you say you don't want to outlaw those things?
If we had time for that conversation, it would be way more than the 25 minutes I have with you. So we have to move on to another mental health issue, which I believe you would agree, and that's students and cell phones. And the governor has a plan which would require legislators' approval, of course. That's you, Majority Leader, which would take effect next school year and force students to disconnect from their phones and other personal devices while at school. A number of anecdotal examples show that when you take the phones away from kids at school, not only do they do better because they focus more, but the kids themselves say they feel better.
Well, I think the governor did a very good thing by going across the state and listening to school districts and getting their opinions on how to deal with this problem of the mega wealthy that control all of our internet operations have literally taken our children to a space where we never want children to be. And that's sad, but I do think that there should be some opportunity for districts to weigh in on how this is dealt with, because I think some districts already exclude phones. They made that decision without the governor saying it in her budget. They were like, no, we're not going to have that in our schools. And there's some principals who already have decided we're not going to have that in our schools. But there's some that still do, and some actually allow the children to do research on their phones because it's a computer. And I just remember when my grandson stopped learning how to do cursive in school and started picking up a computer that looks just like the phone and does basically the same thing, except you can't talk on it in the same fashion. So these young people are in a kind of a strange position where, you know, technology and the virtual education and all these things are moving one way. And at the same time, there are people who are taking advantage through algorithms, knowing that they have access to these phones, taking advantage of them. But this advantage that capitalists take, they take that as a part of this is what you do in America. This is how you make more money. You can make this little bit the honest way. And then you can do these things to the algorithm to make a little bit more and to push people further in another direction if you do this. Some of these things can be legislated, and some of them can't necessarily be legislated. Some of it needs to come out of children's homes. Where, by the way, when you're 8 years old, I don't know why you need to have a cell phone, for sure. But that is some decisions that some children are walking around at, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old with a cell phone. I'm not so sure that's the best call, but they've made that decision. And then business takes advantage of them because they do know how to use them as well. So I think the governor made a good call, except I hope that she would allow districts to make the decision on whether or not these phones are eliminated from their schools.
You are listening to the Capital Connection. She is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes, Democrat, from the Buffalo area. And let's talk about Buffalo for a minute when it comes to AIM aid. We're talking about the state's aid and incentives for municipalities. I know that's a big focus for you coming up this session.
It's a big focus. It's a big focus because, you know, there are five cities in the state of New York that don't have the capacity to earn the same level of revenue from its population base that New York City has or that the state of New York has. And they still have to run municipal government. They cannot raise it all from poor constituents. And so understanding that, I think, is how we even got to AIM way back in the Pataki era. And while we moved away from it, I'm not really sure. Again, I believe that AIM needs to be set at an amount, and it should always be there. These five municipalities should be able to count on it being in their budget when they do their budget every year. Otherwise, the people who are important to New York and important to people like me that are my constituents, they could lose access to service. They could lose access to fire. They could lose access, you know, to police officers, even, you know, educators, because the municipalities won't be able to afford it. And so I do think that AIM is something that should be fully funded consistently. And it should be attached to the cost of living, much like everything else, just like minimum wage, you know, stuff changes. increases happen, it still affects police and fire and streets and schools, and we have to respond to it.
Well, how do you respond to this? Let's go up to the other end of the state, to New York City, where I see New York City Mayor Eric Adams has gone on the Tucker Carlson show. And
what did he say?
Well, he basically said that the Democrats walked away from him. And he used an example of having met with President Biden over the migrant situation. And I don't think he said the president said this to him, but an aide said to him, a Biden aide said to him, you know, you'll just have to deal with this tough situation coming through, but no financial rescue. So his point was that we have all these migrants that arrived in New York City. He used the phrase creating their own crime. And the Democrats walked away from him. They didn't help him when he called for help.
Well, he should have actually called for help before he went and greeted them when they got off that bus, first of all. And secondly, he should have put them back on the bus and sent them back to Texas. If you knew you couldn't afford it, put them on the bus and send them back to Texas. Don't welcome them with open arms and then cry if somebody doesn't help you do what you want to do to take care of them. Now, I get it that New York is a sanctuary city and everybody's supposed to be able to come there. Yes, I get it. But if you don't have the resources, but you lay out the, you know, the red carpet for the people to come, and then when somebody doesn't help you right away, you begin to blame them. No, you should have did what the governor in Texas did. He sent them to New York City intentionally because he knew you weren't going to turn them away, and then you will end up turning on yourself in order to try to figure out how to solve it. You should have sent them back. Now, people don't take a little exception to me when I say that, but honestly, if you don't already have a plan on how you're going to take care of them, don't accept what you don't have a plan for, because it's not fair to the people. And some of those people, when they got here, they basically lived in squalor and cold and without food, and they had already suffered enormous trauma just getting here and then being put on a bus and shipped all the way to New York and didn't get here, and I mean, it's just not even fair to them, quite frankly. And so I think the mayor, God bless him, is just trying to get a new cohort that he can work with that hopefully won't prosecute him.
For those of you that can read the tea leaves, she's signaling the fact that the mayor's under indictment right now, and he met with Trump to cozy up to him, and now has done this interview on Tucker Carlson. So we'll see where that all goes. And what do you make of the fact that the former governor, Andrew Cuomo, seems to do very well against the current mayor in polls, as we hear a lot about the fact that he wants to run for the mayoralship?
I've seen those poll numbers. They actually look pretty good. But, you know, polls are only a look at what's going on right now at this time. Let's see what happens when the election comes up.
Well, the most important thing I can ask you about, I really do believe this, you know, at this time, is how about them Buffalo Bills?
How about them Bills? How about them? I'm so glad you asked me that. Every time I think about how well they're doing this year, I think about my father, who literally has transitioned 20 years ago. But when the Buffalo Bills were conceived, I was a little girl, and my father was so excited about it. I'll never forget the excitement, because we had to literally ride down Jefferson Avenue to get to church on Sundays. And so just to see the people going into the stadium and finding places to park, and I just remember how much excitement it brought him, and how we would go home from church and my mother would prepare dinner and we would do nothing but watch football. And so I learned to love the game because of the way I was raised around the Buffalo Bills, and I'm excited about what they're doing now, and I hope they just keep winning.
Yeah, but they got to get past Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, it's not like they haven't done that before.
Do you consider yourself part of the Bills Mafia?
Because we're a family, yes.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. We are a Bills family in Buffalo, and I say this to a lot of people who don't really get it, but if you like going to the supermarket when there's nobody there, go when the Bills are playing on TV. I mean, you can go, and you don't even have to worry about traffic.
Well, hopefully they make the Super Bowl and they win it.
I hope they make it, and I hope they win it. And by the way, the Bills are the only team that pays income tax in the state of New York.
Yes, you like to remind our listeners of that when we've talked about that in the past.
We might all want to be rooting for them, because as long as they're doing really well, we're collecting income from their income tax. And not only that, as long as the Bills are doing well, the stores are doing well because people need all of the things they need for their football parties.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's adding value to our economy in ways that people least suspect. So go Bills.
Go Bills. She is the majority leader. Crystal Peoples Stokes. That's the majority leader of the New York State Assembly. She's a Democrat and a Buffalo Bills supporter. And we thank you, as usual, for extending us this time on the Capitol Connection to talk about your thinking about New York State government and politics. Thanks again.
I appreciate you hearing my opinion. And thank you so much for having me.
Support for the Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. Capitol Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to the Capitol Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For the Capitol Connection, I'm David Giustina.